I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to What It Takes. This is the show where we dig into the real stories behind the businesses that you see. And today, the incredible people who built them. So we're going to head deep into the world of law, but not just any law. We're talking about the high-stakes, high-impact world of education law with someone who's been on the front lines of courtroom battles and boardroom strategy for nearly 30 years. Our guest is Juan Cruz, the founder and managing attorney of JCA Law, with offices in Laredo, San Antonio, and Corpus Christi, Texas. Juan is not just a lawyer. He's someone who's argued and won in front of the Texas Supreme Court. He's built a multi-city firm from scratch and stood shoulder to shoulder with Texas school districts through some of their toughest legal challenges. Beyond the suit and strategy, Juan is a runner, a traveler, a foodie, and as we learn, someone who genuinely shows up when it matters most. So let's get into it. What does it really take to build a trusted law firm, lead in times of crisis, and stay grounded through it all? Juan, welcome so much. Welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you.
Thank you, Jamie. Such a nice introduction. Really appreciate it.
Oh, sure. I mean, you did all the work. I just got to talk about it. So let's go back to 2013. What was the vision behind launching JCA Law? Like, how did you know there was a need for this kind of firm in Texas?
Sure. So I guess going back a little bit prior to that, to, you know, kind of leading up to 2013, what happened, Jamie, is I graduated from the University of Houston Law Center in 1995. Yes, this is before computers, before cell phones. You know, we went to law school when there was actual books. And I got an offer from a Houston law firm and then an offer from a San Antonio law firm. I decided to join the San Antonio law firm because it was bigger. And looking back, that may not have been a wise decision. And I say that only because the firm had 50-something attorneys. It was very well-respected, insurance defense, high-stakes litigation. But I found myself in a library, and I found myself knowing that I was the only Hispanic in the 54-member law firm at the time, maybe with one other person there. And I thought, you know what, you're going to be writing memos for probably 5 years before you actually even get to kind of meet a person or let alone handle a deposition, let alone, like, you know, do some client interaction. And I befriended a attorney at the firm, and I kind of said, hey, within 6 months, I already knew. I'm like, I really think that I made a mistake. And he's like, well, why do you say that? So I kind of told him what, you know, I was more anxious, more ambitious to kind of do my own thing. So what I ended up doing through our conversation is like, hey, my wife is very good friends with this attorney and another law firm. They're up and coming. They have 13 attorneys, but they just landed the Metropolitan Transit Authority contracts. So they're taking cases to trial every other week. I'm like, well, that sounds fantastic, because the damage is, I mean, in Texas, Jamie, like, if I always tell people that you don't want to get run over by a bus because your family, the maximum they'll get is $100,000. That's a statutory cap, you know, even for, you know, so that's why they would go to trial so much, knowing that the stakes and the jury punishment was not really that severe. So I met her. She introduced me to the head litigator. They're like, hey, we have so much work, come over. And I actually was kind of doing kind of briefing work, but I was actually talking to witnesses, going to trial with them, so on and so forth. And then they ended up, that law firm ended up landing some school law clients. So they had some overflow work, and they started sending me to some, you know, school district board meetings. And I found it interesting, primarily because I come from a family of five, one brother and three sisters, and everybody is really in the education world. Like, if we get together for Sunday lunch, which we do routinely, it's really about, like, you know, education, what's going on in this school district, what's going on with the counselors, did you hear about this really bad peanut allergy situation, so on and so forth. So it's always like, I had that within me. And in fact, I graduated from undergrad in 3 years. So I kind of had a gap year. And in that gap year, I decided to teach. So I kind of had the teaching bug within me, but now I was a lawyer. So I said, well, you know, maybe this educational law business is for me. And I started just working with that law firm. Long story short, in 2000, that law firm based in San Antonio decided to open up an office in South Texas. And they're like, hey, you're the one that's, you know, born and raised in the border, you know, Spanish well, and we'd like for you to sit, you know, try it out. My parents at that point were getting older. And I said, you know what, let me go down. I'll kind of live in, you know, part-time in San Antonio, part-time in Laredo and see how that goes. And it worked out. It worked out. So we just started getting clients here, just developing a good client base. And the firm made me, that law firm made me a named partner in 2010, 2011. Our, I guess, philosophy was not really aligned. So I ended up saying, you know what, in 2013, I think I'm ready to kind of like, you know, taste luck, see if I'm, you know, kind of been able to do it on my own. And so that's when I said, you know what, let's launch this. The attorneys that were working with me at the time decided to kind of take a risk and come with me as well. And kind of that's really what ended up kind of springboarding us, just a little bit of courage. I think that the good thing is that a lot of the clients already knew me and knew of my work and stuff. So that's the way I kind of decided, let's, you know, start off in a law firm in 2013. And it's kind of grown kind of a little crazy since then. So
yeah, what a journey. What did your business planning look like in those early days? Like, especially if you're trying to balance like working with your clients and then also grow at the same time. I can't imagine that was easy.
No, Jamie. And I think that's one thing for attorneys, sad to say, that you have a lot of talented litigators, talented, you know, people that are general practitioners even, but the business side of it, you really have to keep an eye on. And a lot of that work is really weekend work. You're running a business. If you're going to be practicing law, I mean, there's some people that just kind of turn into managing attorneys and that's all they do and really don't have like a good grasp of the law. But that's not me. If I'm going to be in this business, I want to know the statutes that's coming out. I want to be able to be in front of a judge. I want to be in front of my clients at a board meeting, and I want to be up current on the law. So the business side of it, I leave it for the weekend. And at the end of the day, you have to keep very, very close eye on your expenses. And I think I'm probably speaking to the choir, right? But it's as simple as that. And I know that there's a lot of law firms that kind of work on, you know, revolving credits at banks and stuff. I've never have done that. I don't really believe in that. I don't really believe in debt, you know, either on the personal side or on the business side. I think you kind of have to, you know, if you live within your means at home, then you should do the same at the office. And of course, along the way, Jamie, you're going to have attorneys. Like, we are up to, 12 attorneys now. And people have come and gone. You know, sometimes, you know, there's other, I guess, ways that people look at the way law firms may be different, you know, running a law firm may be different than mine. And that's okay, you know, but I think our group today now is the most solid, loyal group that I think I've ever had the pleasure of working with. Of course, it's only taken me 30 years to get here, but but yeah, that's kind of my philosophy anyway, managing the business.
Yeah. And I think that what you said was really important, because we work with clients that have their own law firms as well. And I definitely have some that are like, if I never step foot in another courtroom again, I would be totally fine. And I'm like surprised by that. And then I have others who are like, I never not want to be practicing. Like, I always want to have cases. I always want to be in there. So when you were saying that, I'm like, yeah, it is. It is kind of weird. You see that on both sides. But I also, we work with a lot of professionals who have therapy practices, medical practices, you know, professionals that start off in their job. And you do see that some of them tend to be, hey, I want to let go of some patient care and start doing some more managing, or some that are just like, I only want to be doing that. I don't really want to manage at all, but they are the owner. And so they just happen to get into the seat because they have some, you know, maybe a similar journey to yours or something like that, to where they think, you know, I think I can do this on my own. And I have some thoughts and ideas of on how I want to run them. And then they sit there and realize they don't see how much they actually have to manage and do. So I love that you pointed that out, because that's really, really, really something that you need to think about before jumping in on your own. But you are in three cities. So your approach to expansion and, you know, what you're doing, it seemed to have worked. Was it driven, do you think, by demand or opportunity or something like that, or maybe a little bit of both?
I think it's a little bit of both. And I also think, at least in Texas, like we were saying earlier, it's a big state. People want to make sure that they are, you know, kind of have access to an attorney, almost like a security blanket to a certain extent, that they are there in case a restraining order comes up and stuff. So it's good to have pockets of attorneys in different places, able to get to clients as fast as possible. And now a lot, you know, with the court system, after COVID, a lot of things are done online, so it's not really that necessary. But I still think that people, i.e. clients, really kind of gravitate towards that. And I feel that there's opportunity. There's places in our state that are not as, I guess, maybe the Dallas, the Houstons of the world. So those are the type of towns or cities that most often sometimes get neglected by having people that really know education law in their neighborhoods. And that's kind of what I think we need to give them. Now, let me tell you, with the growth, though, there's a lot of traveling. And that's one thing that people kind of maybe don't see. You know, I think that they kind of see something about, oh, look at the growth, look at the firm, this and that. Yeah, but like in education law, you have to, you know, usually my job is handling client calls as early as 7:30 a.m., working about till 4 p.m., getting the suitcase ready, going to a board meeting that starts at 6 p.m., and then coming home about 10, 11, you know, p.m., and that's Monday, and that's Tuesday, and that's Wednesday. So I always tell people, if you're going to practice at least education law, it is much more demanding than you may think. And as you know, Jamie, now it's almost the topic du jour about education in our United States. So even more so now, you have to really be on top of your game, you know, and I don't think it works well for somebody that's managing a law firm that, you know, I do a lot of public speaking, do a lot of training for administrators. You're talking about 100 people, 200 people, 300 people, you know, about legislative updates, case law updates, about, you know, things that they need to get ready from one year to the next. And in the audience, you'll have people that are going to ask you questions, you know, because they want to know, if I'm a principal and there is a mom and dad that are fighting and, you know, one wants to take the kid, like, what do I do? Like, you got to be able to know what the law is and respond to them. If not, you're going to look like a fool. You're going to look like somebody that just has a contract, manages the law firm, but doesn't know anything about the substance of education law, which, by the way, has a lot of employment law within it, because every school system usually is the biggest employer of the town or city, whether it's a metropolitan area or a rural area. And for that reason, you're going to have most of the claims come up with issues on employee issues. So,
yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. There's a lot of overlap there and knowing all of that. But a lot of, I think, small firm owners specifically, they get stuck trying to scale. And you really kind of talked about some of the challenges that you had and just being willing to travel and do other things. There were some clear benefits to that. But especially with your philosophy on debt and things like that, what were some key decisions or investments that help you grow intentionally in that, especially if you weren't going to, you know, take on a bunch of debt ahead of time and expand that way? You really kind of had to build up and finance that yourself.
Yeah. Well, I kind of also, number one, I learned that from home. You know, my parents were very within, you know, you live within the means. I never really saw them like swipe credit cards when we would go to the store or restaurant. You know, that was just not them. So maybe that I guess I just kind of learned it through osmosis, right? And that just kind of now have followed me. And I really have never been a fan of debt or thought about debt as a... And a lot of my buddies, you know, tell me, it was like, oh, why don't you just go get a loan and you can, you know, afford this. Like, no, I'm not going to get a loan. You know, I went to law school and I came out with $18,000 worth of debt for 3 years, paid it off within the first year. And I live like a, you know, although I had a good job at that firm that I told you about, I live with two other friends of mine. Like I was still a law school student because I said, you know what, I'm going to take care of that debt altogether. And so when I started the business, I've always run it that way. Like, you know what, this is what we have in the income. These are going to be expenses. And if we need to modify the expenses, we got to make sure that we bring them down or cut wherever we can and still be able to provide a good style of living for everybody, but work within the means that you have instead of just going either, you know, charging on a credit card or going to the bank. And, you know, and banks, as we know, and we have, you know, we've seen what has happened through the economy in the United States. There's a lot of very quick lenders. And then, you know, we as a society suffer because of banks just lending out monies that people can't really repay. So yeah, that's kind of been my philosophy about running a business. Be pragmatic about it and know really what your bottom line every single month, every single week. So yeah, it's a task, but it's doable, very doable.
So good. I love that. I think that's very important. But I think one of the things that you said really kind of hits home is that it starts from home. Mm-hmm. It starts with how do you personally, not business owner you, not anything, how do you personally live? Are you living within your means? And that skill, because it really is a skill, especially in this day and age, in our culture, in our more instant gratification type age that we're in, it does carry with you into your business owner decision-making as well. And so making financial decisions, knowing what your numbers are, knowing, staying on top of all that, I think that really helps. So I want to talk, though, about trust, because a lot of what you're saying, it sounds like you've had good models for you and you've kind of shifted and taken what you've learned in your childhood, your family growing up, and then you are living that out now. What does it take to earn and keep the trust of clients like school districts, first of all? Talking about that, I mean, you talked about what's going on in the United States right now, but specifically Texas is kind of leading the forefront on that. You know, how do you start to build those trusts and relationships with those entities?
Yeah, that's so interesting. You mentioned the issue of trust, because trust is a very big word in Texas public school district law. In fact, kind of there's Commissioner of Education decisions that say if there's a breach of trust between the employer and the employee, that's good cause for termination. So I actually built a lot of my cases on the issue of trust. And it's just so surprising that you bring it up. But I think of trust in two things. Number one, within the office, there has to be a level of trust with our staff and stuff. And I've been lucky that my former legal assistant, now office manager, has been with me for 20 years. Yes. 20 years. Yeah. So I've got an award by the local bar here last week, but the week before that, I'm not even sure anymore. Anyway, and I recognized her because I said she's the glue in the office. She knows every bank account. She knows everything. But I, to your point, Jamie, I trust her in order for me to be able to, you know, do what I do away from the office, sometimes be out of the office for 3-4 days, but knowing that things are running well, people are, you know, reporting to work, doing what they need to kind of keep, you know, on top of the client work. And I think to your question about trust within clients, number one, it's something that you're not going to develop overnight. You know, even if a client hires you, they're probably going to hire you based upon your resume. You know, some of the stuff that you were very gracious to read about my bio and, you know, Supreme Court and so on and so forth. All that is going to carry you so far. But at the end of the day, it's going to take a year, possibly two, to develop trust so that they see the work product, so that they know that if they ask you a question, you know, you're going to be just honest. You're going to, you know, work with integrity. You're going to give them the law. without your opinion. And in Texas, Jamie, I mean, we have a lot of clients now. We're blessed to have all over from Dallas to El Paso to Corpus to Central Texas to South Texas. Every pocket of Texas is different in terms of what they think. And I'll be frank with you, some areas are more Republican, some areas are more Democrat. So, and in, you know, in school law, as you know, you deal with topics such as religion in schools, such as, you know, guns, you know, for personnel and stuff like that. And every school board is going to have their opinion about stuff. And I tell my folks, and I remind myself, we don't put our opinions about what they should do in their communities. We tell them what the law is. We give them the guidance. We tell them what the risks are. And they have to make the ultimate decision based upon what they feel is good for their community. And one last thing about trust, you know, school boards in Texas, are there seven of them? That's the law. And there's always going to be a minority and a majority. The worst thing you can do is give advice that's favorable to the majority, because the majority is the one that maybe, you know, hires you or has the capacity to fire you. Think you will earn more trust by what I always tell administrators: you never govern out of fear. Whatever, you know, the law is, whether the majority likes it or the minority does not like it, whatever the case may be, you just give it to them straight. And you have the statute, you have the case backing you up, so they know that you're not really just, it's an opinion that you're giving them. It's basically a well-researched opinion that you're giving them based upon the law, and let them make the decision ultimately. They are the policymakers, we're not.
I think that's so good. And before I head into our last question, just that point of, I think we face that as well with our clients, is many times we give advice or kind of direct them in ways using our experience, using very clear black and white, clear expectations, clear communication on things. But I feel as if we build more trust when we're not telling everyone what they want to hear, when we're really saying, hey, listen, we think you need to tread lightly here, or you might not want to hear this, but we're going to tell you. And it's just as hard as for me to tell you as it is for you to hear, and things like that. And those things tend to build more trust than just saying yes all the time. Yes. And, you know,
and David, but it's also the way you deliver that hard.
Absolutely. Advice. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because I always try to, you know, you got to have some empathy while you, because you may be telling something, giving advice to somebody that's not what they want to hear. And it may be something that's personal to them. So it's in the way you deliver the no to a client. And that can be the difference between them saying, you know what, he said it, but he said it in such a negative way. Like, I don't really want him as our lawyer anymore. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And that goes back to, you have to build up to that, right? I mean, you don't just come off on the very first, you know, 5 minutes of meeting somebody and just, you know, tell them everything that you think you know. You really have to listen first. You have to get to know them. You have to build trust. You said over, you know, sometimes over a year it takes to really get somebody to do that. So, we love ending with this question because it means something different to everyone. So Juan, what does it take to be a business owner?
I think what it takes is a lot of, you know, and this is not a word that's used a lot when you're talking about business, but kindness. I really do think that you need to be kind to people so that they know that, you know what, you are a good person and that's why they want to do business with you. No one wants to be doing business with a jerk. I mean, that's not even if it's an attorney. And quite frankly, if you're a jerk as an attorney, you're probably not going to be successful in the courtroom or negotiating a deal for anybody. I think you also need to be a hard worker, you know, knowing that you got to put in, there's no substitute for hard work. You got to know that that's just comes along with the territory. And you also need to make sure that you handle the work that you're able to handle, and don't take on work that is out of your wheelhouse, that you don't know how to even begin, but you want to think, okay, I can handle this. No, I mean, like, people come to me, let me tell you, you want family law, you want criminal law, you want personal injury, don't come to me. I'm not your guy. That's not what I do. Okay. There's a lot of people that do that, and they do that very well. So know your craft and do that craft very well.
Oh, that is so good. Juan, thank you so much for sharing your story from courtroom wins to everyday work of running a values-driven business. That is very clear that that is very important for you and your team. Your journey kind of reminds me of that, like, real leadership shows up in the storm, not just in the sunshine, right? Like, when things get hard, that's when everybody, you know, true leadership kind of rises to the top. So, listeners, if you want to learn more about Juan and his firm, where can they find you, Juan?
Yeah, so our website is www.jca-law.com. And my personal email is jcruz@jca-law.com.
Awesome. And they can follow along at JCA Law on Instagram and Facebook. And we can link everything in the show notes too. So if you guys are listening, you guys can go onto that page and find that. As always, thank you so much for tuning in to What It Takes. If today's episode inspired you, challenged you, or made you think a little bit differently about leadership, do us a favor and share it with a friend or a fellow business owner. Until then, we will catch you next time. Thanks so much.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.